The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
There is a gift to the spaciousness that we can give ourselves to sit with something. The practice of sitting on a mountain or in a garden and doing the rewarding work of just paying attention. Stopping the monkey mind and the frenzy to constantly be in motion, the false pressure to produce and sit still. Most spiritual practices that work their magic the way they are intended to are some invitation for us to slow down and pay attention. Walk the Camino of Santiago, attentive to who and what you meet along the way. Chant, singing the same words over and over, and let the music take you somewhere beyond ordinary time that it has taken generations of singers before you. All these are ways that we throw open the door to spirit. And another well-worn way is to sit with a text. Even sit with the same one over time, or the flip side, to write or create out of what we hear and find in the world and in ourselves, out of that attentiveness. All of it ways to stay awake, listening. So poetry, the reading of it, the writing of it, can be a gorgeous piece of this life of attentiveness, and I think it is for many of us. A favorite way to throw open the door to spirit. Now, I want to be clear. I don't want us to take ourselves too seriously. There is bad poetry. In fact, you know, people give me books. Sometimes they don't even tell me who's giving them to me, which is even more funny. But one person gave me a book called, it looks very official too, isn't it? Very Bad Poetry. If you'd like to borrow it, you can. There are a lot of groaners. None of it, I'm sure, is written by people who intended to write very bad poetry. One of my favorites in the collection is by Lillian Curtis. It's a poem written to the potato. It's entitled The Potato. I thought I'd read you a few stanzas. Are you open to that? Okay, here we go. What on this wide earth that is made or does by nature grow is more homely, yet more beautiful than the useful potato? What would this world full of people do, rich and poor, high and low, were it not for this little thought of but very necessary potato? On the whole, it is a very plain plant, makes no conspicuous show, but the internal appearance is lovely of the unostentatious potato. I mean, it's hard to believe someone didn't write this as a joke, but I don't think they did. On the land or on the sea, wherever we may go, we are always glad to welcome the homely potato. And here is the conclusion, the moral lesson for you all that you've been waiting for. A practical and moral lesson, this may plainly show that though homely, our heart can be like that of the homely potato. Okay, people, so we can find meaning, we can express it in so many ways. And I hope that that frees you up a little to explore your own expressions. I hope it didn't scare you off, but gives you a little more permission to risk, because I think it's pretty clear none of us can produce poetry worse than the Ode to the Potato. So feel free to let your spirit wander and have some fun. I think we're going to enjoy this morning listening to people who put images and feelings and wonderings to words. I think we all know of some poem, maybe many, but some poem that found us at just the right time. One that put to words something, gave us a glimpse of an answer, maybe just helped us to feel a little less alone in something we were holding, and the power of that. I've found, and I bet many of you have, that a poem will accrete over time, that our relationship with it can grow deeper, the way any relationship does when we revisit and discover new aspects and layers of what it has to say to us. It's the beauty of sitting with text in a spiritual way. I love poetry that knocks me off my feet. I also love poetry that doesn't take itself too seriously and invites me to laugh and find meaning in the silly and the ordinary. And I love to share poetry. It's like trading great recipes, right? We're fed by something that's powerful and delicious, and the most natural thing is to want to share it. And this service, in many ways, is crafted in that spirit. Many of you shared some of your favorite poems, ones by friends. We have some by people among us that are gorgeous and fun to share back. So I invite you to sit with all of it. And the invitation's to let poems and images take you somewhere. Kathleen McClung, who is so gifted, recently had a poem published in an anthology, which is lovely, of California poets, all women who are 60 years of age or older, 175 of them, one for every year of the state of California. And the collection is called, and I love this title, Women in a Golden State. Part of it is about aging, and, you know, it's beautiful. And I asked if she would read the poem that she wrote in it, and then I thought again and asked if she would be willing to talk about her relationship to poetry as a writer of it. Poetry, I wondered, as a spiritual practice, and she graciously agreed, and we are blessed. Kathleen.
In the recession of 2007, like a lot of people, I was laid off from my job. I'd worked as a book editor for over 10 years and took pride in managing production and sales of textbooks for nurses and other healthcare professionals. After the meeting with my boss about the layoff, I walked down the hall back to my small, windowless office. I felt a swirl of emotions, but one that rose up loud was this. Okay, Kathleen, now's the time to get serious about your own writing. You've focused on other people's books all these years. Focus now on yours. So I decided to rent an office to go to write. Eventually, I found an affordable one on Craigslist, a sublet in a cluster of therapy offices. Best of all, this one had a window, a view onto bamboo trees, tall grass, wood fence. 18 years later, and 6 books of poetry later, on the days when I'm not teaching, I'm still walking to this office, a mile from my apartment. I'm still sitting in a big comfy chair or lying on the therapy couch, and I'm still writing poetry. For me, it's a spiritual practice to close the door, look out the window, keep my phone off and at the bottom of my purse, write words on paper, scribble out some of those words, look out the window, then write some more words. I want to say just a bit more about my poem making as spiritual practice. I write mostly about everyday things, little moments or encounters that stay with me, stuff that surprises me or intrigues me, stuff I want to fiddle around with for a little while. Poet Lucille Clifton said once, "I don't write out of what I know, I write out of what I wonder." And I agree with her. Sometimes poem making helps me figure out, maybe even begin to heal from, complicated, painful life experiences. And here's an example. In the summer of 2018, I served as jury forewoman for a vehicular manslaughter trial. A child was killed in a crosswalk by a driver, and we jurors had to listen to testimony and then deliberate on whether the driver was guilty or not guilty of criminal neglect. This experience was emotionally challenging for me on so many levels. For one thing, we were told by the judge we could not talk about the trial with anyone, not a therapist, not a minister, nobody. And that was torture. So within a few days of the end of the trial, when we could finally talk again, I wrote a poem. And then some more poems, some of them about my jury experience, and some of them about jurors I imagined serving in other courtrooms. Ultimately, I wrote a small book and I titled it, "A Juror Must Fold In on Herself." It was necessary for me, emotionally and spiritually necessary, to write those poems. The book was published in 2020, during the darkest days of the pandemic. And during the pandemic, I kept writing poems in my office. I kept looking out the window at the bamboo trees, kept looking within for the words. I kept doing my spiritual practice. For 2 years, I was the only person in the building. All of the therapists were working from home, online, working harder than ever. During those pandemic years, I gave poetry readings online, I taught my classes online, I listened to Vanessa's sermons online. And her sermons, by the way, are poems. The pandemic, as we know, did sort of end. And to end this reflection, I'll read that poem that Vanessa invited me to share. It comes from the anthology she held up called Women in a Golden State, California Poets at 60 and Beyond. I wrote this poem when the college where I teach reopened late in the pandemic and we could meet our students in person again. Right around the time that the doors to this church reopened and we could gather in this beautiful sanctuary together again. This is a poem about the joy of community. It's also a poem about getting my hair colored by a cosmetology student in a community college hair salon. But mostly, it's a poem of celebration. Knowledge and Praxis, a Late Pandemic Abecedarian. A cosmetology department flyer on a bulletin board near the faculty lounge catches my eye, punctures my inertia. Damn this dull gray, damn COVID. Except for Tom, nobody's touched my face, my hair, for 2 years. Give me your finest chemicals. Don't hesitate. Keep foiling each strand. Even if your professor steps in, takes charge, just as you turn to my bangs. Knowledge and praxis coalesce with time. Let me sit silent under the black cape. My quiet's no critique of you, dear novice. No. I'm soaking it all in. old teacher in a fluorescent temple. Paradise, really, after so long a quarantine. Music of blow dryers, voices rising, someone's Beyoncé ringtone, clink of scissors, murmur of combs, harmonics teaching us in this mirrored room how to unite, how to encircle, beautify each other versus splintering into posses, aiming words, weapons, memes. By the sink, I exhale, inhale. Do I smell lavender shampoo? Yes, yes. It lingers long after I zip my wallet, drive home almost blonde. Thank you.
Poetry seems somehow perfectly suited for certain kinds of writing. Writing that grapples with loss, grief, the bittersweet wrestling with mortality seems suited to the pared back language of the poet. Like life stripped back to its bare essentials, like if you've seen it or pictures of it, the eastern face of, this is in the east and sets in, the western face of Anton Gaudí's Sagrada Familia church in Barcelona. The face that was about death, the death of Jesus, and unlike the eastern face of that same church, which is alive with carvings of trees and flowers like the Garden of Eden, this western face that grappled with death was all sinew and bone in stone. Life stripped back, unapologetic, spare, and honest. There are lots of jokes about it not being a proper Unitarian Universalist sermon or service without a poem or a reference to Mary Oliver. Has a lot of truth to it. She is a favorite poet for many of us. And she often grapples with life in language that is both rich and stripped back to its basics. So this morning, I thought I'd share a favorite of mine, written as she looks out over a landscape that I think is turning to fall and winter. In Blackwater Woods. Look, the trees are turning, their own bodies into pillars of light are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating away over the blue shoulders of the ponds, and every pond, no matter what its name is nameless now. Every year, everything I have ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this, the fires and the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it. And when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. Let me ask you to reflect for a moment. What do you hold to your bones? What have you held close as if your life depended on it? And when the time came, or will come, How will you let it go?
Francesca Bell is the current poet laureate of Marin County, and her poem, After the Hearing Test, comes from her gorgeous 2023 book, What Small Sound. Francesca is not completely deaf, but her book contains poems about her mother's deafness and Francesca's own gradual hearing loss. And in this, too, is a rich engagement with life and however it comes, in all the ways that it comes, grapples also with letting go and loss that is part of our lives, too. After the hearing test, it's 2 days before I cry. Grief sneaks up on me the way sound does now. My ability to mourn as sluggish as my inner ears. Cilia do not rejuvenate. We have that in common. I won't mind losing the clamor of cocktail parties, high grind of the dentist's drill, triggering retch of other people's vomit, but I'd like to keep Telemann's trumpet concerto in D. The tiny chuff my python makes up close to my ear, the calls of two Canada geese as they circled the slough this morning, seeming lost, their cries trailing them like a woman's heavy train, and the indecipherable murmur of my beloved's voice as she held my hand while the bear ate my baked beans just outside our tent. Though I could not make out her assurances, may they burble over me forever. Loss accrues, the geese can tell you. It compounds like interest. Oh, world, leave me slowly. Let me dally over each diminishing return.
Poetry can also be another way we pray. Prayers of lamentation, poems of praise and thanksgiving, prayers of petition, asking for what we can't make happen, but dream of and hope for ourselves, for the world, for those we love. In that theme, Carol Davison, who's a member of this congregation, sent a poem that she wrote years ago for her granddaughter. Watching the child walk became this metaphor for how the child moves through the world, a start for a poem that ends with a prayer for the girl. Carol couldn't be here, so Kathleen will read it, but we thank Carol for submitting it.
Stepping Over the Broken Places by Carol Davison. My granddaughter walks along a stone wall's narrow crest, meeting a patch of crumbling mortar, broken stones. Without hesitation, places her small foot just beyond the jagged spot. She knows this wall well, navigates each treacherous, narrowed stone stretch with the confidence of a child certain she is safe. Dearest child, may the muscle memory of your heart ever hearken, leaping to step over each of the broken places you meet. I encourage you to think and reflect on your hopes, fears, and vulnerabilities. Is there something you would like to ask of the universe? What words or images come to mind for such a poem or a prayer?
Robert Levett Smith is another member, beloved in this community, and another gifted and published poet. In the collection of his earlier work, there's a piece I love entitled "The Verrazano Narrows at a Distance." It captures this lovely way that sometimes we see in the world something like Carol's granddaughter stepping, and it stands for us in that moment and afterwards as a metaphor, how we can go into a moment of reverie sometimes in the midst of our lives in any time or place, and how he finds in this one moment so much of the invitations of life, the fears, but also the promise of what holds through it all. All in this one moment in 1985, looking at a bridge from Hoboken. Through the haze, I can see the dully gleaming span and a dark knot of gulls tying and untying itself in the air. It's cold for late March, silent as only Sunday mornings can be. I'm sitting alone at the Castle Point lookout, where the only sound is the rope banging hollowly against the flagpole, feeling the chill of the marble bench through my jeans. And as is true, every time I come here, I can't help but imagine my own body broken and bloodied on the rocks below, a bent, still spot beside the shining water. Although my life seems blessed, now that the wind tastes of spring, I contemplate death with the kind of dull wonder that makes a man holding a knife feel compelled to run his finger along the cutting edge. There is, after all, nothing in myself that the world would really miss were I to take that dizzying step into oblivion. But I always remember the bridge, the way it seems incredibly to hang in the void, supported by nothing as the heart is. How, like the heart, it carries us bravely between one thing and the next. I think to close, it feels fitting to affirm two things simultaneously. First, the gift of staying alive to the world, awake to it, to life, connected and tuned in and seeing signs and intuiting insights in the landscape of bird and bridge and a granddaughter's walk and an afternoon at the salon, all of it. And on the other side, the reality that we can't live awake like that all the time, that life is exhausting and shutting down is normal and sometimes necessary. And so we live a life paying attention and working to pay attention, and gentle and permissive, of how hard it is to do that simple thing of being awake, of paying attention. In that spirit, we will close with a poem that Bob, by the way, this is one of the collections of his poetry, sent. It was written by a friend, Dorianne Lowe. And I read it because it's this beautiful, gentle acknowledgement and admonition both to all of us. Poetry. Poetry itself sweetly asking us to pay attention, and also this one naming the lifelong challenge to do so and what slips through our fingers so often. And all of that, a part of life and being human too. So we'll end here with a poem titled Dust. Someone spoke to me last night, told me the truth. Just a few words, but I recognized it. I knew I should make myself get up, write it down, but it was late, and I was exhausted from working. All day in the garden, moving rocks. Now, I remember only the flavor, not like food, sweet or sharp, more like a fine powder, like dust. And I wasn't elated or frightened, but simply rapt, aware. That's how it is sometimes. God comes to your window, all bright light and black wings. And you are just too tired to open it. May poetry be one of the things that helps us open the window to life. May music do it. May we find ourselves in the company of all that can help us keep a window open to life, to spirit, to the wide expanse of mystery and what connects us most deeply to one another and all things of beauty, truth, goodness.